Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Kevin and Andrew, and this is the Jayhawk Talk Podcast. Andrew, we decided we're going to hold off doing a podcast until, gosh darn it, KU gets ranked number one. And you know what? You know what happened? I think KU's going to be ranked number one starting Monday. It's a Sunday night. How you doing tonight, Andrew?
I'm doing good, Kevin. We're going to have to do podcasts every week because we're not going to give it up. We're not going to give it up the rest of the season. We're going to get the number one overall seed. We're going to cruise through the Big 12 tournament.
And
then
is that the coast, same?
Coast is like easy. Cruise is like, you know, put the foot on the gas, just go.
Just go. All right.
And that's what this team does. Just put their foot on the gas and go. No, they're not a fast team. They can win a game with 64 points. But you know what? That's why this team is going to be different than other teams in the tournament. But, you know, let's talk about the Baylor game. Got a lot of things to talk about, but we're going to be number one because of this Baylor game that happened yesterday. We're recording this on a Sunday. Kevin, biggest game, biggest regular season turnaround or feeling about a game since when?
You know, it's tough to contextualize, and I know there's a lot of recency bias here, but that Dayton game earlier in the season was pretty darn good. Like, I think it's if people go back and watch that game, I mean, remember how good Dayton was? I mean, they could not miss a shot, first of all. And, I mean, what'd they go, like, I don't know, 10 of 18 from three or something? No, more than that. It was like 16 of 33, something like it. It was like close to 50%. They made like a billion threes. And yet we still won that game in overtime. I think that's probably... I mean, this is a more impactful game, obviously, but like in terms of just quality game, I think that Dayton game's up there from the season. But I think this is in a different class because obviously we're playing the number one team, and we don't play the number one team very often, Andrew. It's usually we are the number one team, right? And so that was a lot of fun to have a three versus one matchup and go down there and get that win, particularly because they obviously rolled us in Allen Fieldhouse.
Yeah, it's good to get that win, a revenge game. You know, Bill Self has only lost a season series one time, and that was Oklahoma State, randomly. Mike Boynton, I mean, that's a little piece of trivia for you.
Yeah.
It's not like a Rick Barnes back in the day. It's not a Kelvin Sampson back in the day, or even a Shaka Smart recently. Or anybody that you know the name of, it's Mike Boynton, Oklahoma State. But we didn't happen. It didn't happen this year with Scott Drew. And, you know, we've got four games left in this conference season. What do you want to do? Do you want to get into this Baylor game more specifically? Because I can talk about Doak for the next 4 hours.
I would love to just dissect all the dunks from the entire season. Just do one roll of the dunks and then just do like a 3 hour podcast just talking about each dunk, like have it roll and just spend like 30 minutes a dunk.
So, you know, a couple games ago, they said he was in the 60s in terms of dunks. He's been getting a lot recently. So he's got to be somewhere in the 80s or 90s.
Yeah, at least. I mean,
there should be someone who power ranks all the dunks.
I know there is somewhere out there where you can actually track how many dunks somebody has had.
No, I'm talking about like TikTok.
I understand.
Here are the top 95 dunks from Udoka Azubuike this season.
I understand. But the reason I remember that is because do you remember the Perry Ellis dunk report that we used to do?
I don't. This is a but play. That sounds awesome. Perry Ellis had like probably six or seven in his career.
No, so flashback to 2015. The only reason I remember this is because it came up on my time hop from 5 years ago. My KU dunk report running picture, and at this time on this day 5 years ago, do you know who was leading the team in dunks on that team?
Cliff Alexander.
Very good. 29 dunks.
Alexander. Oh, man. I was trying to remember that season who was on that team. Cliff had a lot of dunks. And
that
then
was
he,
very impressive.
And then he did not finish the season.
Yeah.
Did he finish the season with the most, or did Perry catch him?
I think he had to. I don't know that for sure. Because at this point, Perry was second on the team, but with 18. Any guesses who was third? And then we'll move on from this very obscure question.
Oh, my gosh.
I'll give you a hint. Freshman.
Yeah. So Wayne Seldon? No. That was the year before.
Give up.
Kelly
Nagy. Oubre.
Kelly
yeah.
Oubre?
Yeah. That's
Kelly, okay.
Nice. That's very good, Andrew. That's impressive.
Yeah. This mine's a steel trap.
I see that.
Encyclopedic knowledge.
Very impressive. To put that in your pipe and smoke it review that says we don't remember things. So Udoka Azubuike, Andrew, goes for 23 points and 19 rebounds with a few blocks in there too for good measure. I think we had a Twitter question ask us best big man performance since. I know it's kind of, we're going to test your steel trap now, but any thoughts on the one that comes to mind for me is that Nick Collison game.
That is the answer.
Yeah, right.
That is the answer. That is the Kelvin Sampson slap.
So I'm pulling it up here. It was Texas.
Nick
right?
Vitale stands up and claps. He never does that. He's only done it twice.
David Robinson.
He's only done it twice.
It was him and David Robinson, right? I think that was right.
He went 30 and 20.
Did he go that? Did he have that much point? I know he had 20.
I think he was 30 and 20. But
okay, I know he had 20 plus rebounds and he had 20 plus points, but I can't remember what the. Anyway, it was a bonkers game. I was kind of thinking about some other ones, Andrew. I don't know. Remember the Cole Aldrich triple double game in the tournament?
In the tournament.
Yeah. So we'll give some there. That was a pretty impressive game.
Another one. I mean, we just talked about it. Doak from this season against Dayton.
Yeah.
You know, 29 points. Similar field, dominated the game. But the other thing on that one was he was overshadowed a little bit by Devon Dotson, who had 31 and also looked like an incredible player.
Yeah.
Yesterday was Doak's game, though. That was a Doak game. It was all – everything on defense was focused around him. Everything on offense was focused around him, and he still dominated the entire game.
Yeah, I think Garrett had 7 assists, and I'm pretty sure – all 7 were dunks from Garrett to Azubuike. It felt like Garrett was just driving and just literally throwing it without thinking. Just not like he would not even look at the basket. Like he was throwing it behind his back. He's throwing it between his legs. It didn't matter. Like just put it above the rim and Doak was there. There were a couple where Doak caught it seemingly on the freaking free throw line and was throwing them down, right? I mean, that was nuts.
And we'd seen him sort of do that before, but not with that distance. I mean, because they were catching him in the right spot. I mean, it just goes to show the guards are as much to credit as Doak on this. But they were hitting him in air, in stride, in the right spot, and he was going up and getting it and dunking it, which, you know, I think is a skill in its own. It's maybe harder than shooting 3-pointers. Like they should be worth 3 points.
The guy has incredible hands. I don't think people talk about that enough. Like to almost always catch entry passes from all over the place, right? He's exceptional at catching entry passes and he is exceptional at catching lobs. I mean, he obviously has big hands, but they're sticky. I mean, he's got incredible hands. And then the other thing that jumps out is he played 36 minutes and he was still running hard at the end. I'm not sure Big Dave gave him a lot of help fouling out.
I don't know if I've seen, let's talk about another big man performance. When was the last time you saw someone foul out in 4 minutes?
Oh man.
Jamari Traylor maybe.
Yeah. Jamari had a couple of those. Who else was a big time fouler? Kevin Young would foul a lot. Off the bench.
But he would get more than 4 minutes. I mean, yeah. I think the only David McCormick and Jamari have got to be the two contenders for that.
I think you're right.
That is, I mean, and he had one really good jumper. He's got that jumper from the corner, maybe that 10-foot, 12-foot jumper that he seems to make one a game, or two a game, and it looks good. It looks like, it and the rest good. Of it's garbage. Rebounds and putbacks and stuff around the rim, but he's got that one. If he can pull that defender out just a little bit, open up the lane, like that's a great play, but he's got to stay on the court if he wants to do some of that.
Yeah, I don't think I want Doak playing 36 minutes a game every game, but obviously this was a huge one, and it made a lot of sense to keep him out there. I mean, what it was there also, you know, with DeSosa out, there's not like a whole lot else they could have gone to either. Right. So it was sort of by necessity, and he obviously capitalized. He was a stud.
Let's talk about that DeSosa thing real quick, just while we're talking big man and rotation. When he comes back, and I think he comes back, he's eligible for the last game of the season against Texas Tech. Is he back in the rotation, or is he?
Yeah, we got this Twitter question from Michael Chavez. That exact question, Andrew. Oh,
the people want to know.
The people want to know. I don't think he's in the rotation. I think it would have taken a game like yesterday for him to get 5 minutes.
That would be my next question. Is what would he have gotten yesterday? With McCormick, you know, fouling out in 4 minutes.
Five minutes. I mean, I think Doak would have played 30 minutes in that game still. I think it partially depends on time and score and what's going on in the game. Like if we were up 12 still and Silvio comes in and plays well and we're still up 10 after 3 minutes or 2 minutes, you know, he probably stays out there a little longer. If it starts to go south, I mean, he probably is taken out, but so some of it's time and score, but I mean, he's good at running the court, getting rebounds, high energy and fouling people. I mean, that's basically what Dave was doing, except for making the jumper that you mentioned. So, I don't know. I would be surprised if he has a game the rest of the season with more than, what are you going to say 6 or 7 minutes the rest of the entire season.
I wish he could play the whole game against K-State.
That was the only exception I was thinking about.
Unfortunately, well, maybe in the tournament. Maybe that's in the Big 12 tournament.
The Big 12 tournament. when it's a 4 day, there's 3 games in 3 days.
He'll start.
You know, we get up by 20, and next thing you know, it's just the Silvio show in the second half, just dunking over dudes. Give me that. Oh, man. That's what I need in my life. So, yeah, good question though, Michael, and we'll see. I don't think it's going to be a big change personally from on the rotation.
Well, let's talk about guards since we talked about the big men. We obviously know Devon Dotson is on pace or on course to be All-American, to be Big 12 Player of the Year, at least in the conversation, has a good argument for both along with Doak. But the other guards, some question marks and some high bright spots. So let's talk about Marcus Garrett. I think we also have a Twitter question because you talked to me before the show started that just said this: Marcus Garrett is the best defender since ... And my immediate reaction is, I don't think you put three dots. I think you just put a period.
Yeah.
He is the KU's best defender. I can't really think back, and it's hard to compare apples and oranges because you've got guys. I think Embiid won Big 12 Player of the Year. Obviously, Jeff Withey won, I think, twice.
You're talking about defensive?
Defensive player.
Yep.
But Cole. That's – Cole won twice. Or Cole won it once.
But
that's because they sat in the middle and just got 5 blocks a game. And you can win defensive player of the year doing that. And you can be a great defensive player.
Well, let's talk about some guys.
Be that back anchor. The only other comparison is Mario Chalmers. So those are the guys I'm throwing out, at least in the recent Bill Self era. If you can go back further,
I mean, Russ Chamberlain, obviously. Russ Robb's out there. Relaford's up there.
Right.
And you hear those names kind of bandied about. Chalmers was good, but he was more of an opportunist, right? I mean, he just knew how to play lanes.
That's great that he won Big 12 Player of the Year, but I think everyone, at least the circles that I ran in back in 2008, thought that was Russell Robinson's award.
Yeah, and I think the reason that Chalmers can win that is because Russ Robb was you know, putting so much pressure on that the guy was throwing crappy passes to the other guard.
Lyric in the song was Russell Robinson's
robbing him, man. Throwback for a few people that remember that. I think that you're exactly right. Watching him, particularly on ball defend, and it's not so much, you know, you think about a good on ball defender that can prevent a guy from catching the ball, right? or prevent a guy from getting around you, or you know, that sort of thing, or high energy where, you know, you're just on them, you know, the whole time. They you never stay get less than a step away. The thing that he has all that, but the thing that he has that I cannot remember seeing in another college basketball player in some time is just the instincts with his hands to steal the ball. I mean, it's like art watching him in slow motion. I mean, I would never want to dribble against that guy. Like, don't put the ball on the floor, man. Like, if I get the ball and he's in front of me, like, I'm passing the ball. Like, and that is a huge asset, because now it's on tape everywhere.
Or twice a game, he's at the top of the key guarding whoever's bringing the ball down, and he either knocks it off the guy's leg, knocks it off the guy's other hand, knocks it off some part of his body. Sometimes he gets it, sometimes the guy's able to recover and start dribbling again. But it's like once or twice a game, they're just not paying attention, and he's going to go after you. And then he gets in passing lanes, gets it when guys are driving, he can take the ball away. He's got a lot of tools that can get those steals, but you know, you can just count on it. Like, you see the guy come down the court, Garrett's up at the top. Okay, he's going to poke this away.
He's a maestro. Like, and that's the thing. It's the poke. It's the reach around the other side and then go the opposite direction poke that he does all the time. And like, you don't see that. Maybe you see it once a game or less. He does it like three or four times a game, it feels like, or he's close to it. And that's unreal.
And you see guys like that. I mean, like, I think that there are similar guys like Mario Chalmers, Russell Robinson, who did that. But Marcus Garrett is also a shutdown defender. Like, if you try to go to the hole on him, he's not going to let you shoot. So there are two different skills, completely different, that he has absolutely mastered.
Yeah, and you could end of game. I mean, let's talk about that for a second, where it was clear that we wanted, you know, Marcus on the ball, and they obviously did a switch, and I think we knew it was coming, and you obviously had to switch there. Now, there's a question of whether you foul on the switch. Mm-hmm. That's a different story. I think I'm more on that foul side at that point, although they were short on fouls, the both those guys, but still, I don't think it matters. I think you fouled there. But regardless,
we won a national championship based on this theory.
Exactly. And so, anyway, they switch. And the one thing Devon did, though, that I appreciated is he just went straight. He goes straight to putting his hand right in the guy's eyes. like he puts his hand up. I mean, he's obviously in front of him, but he is not going to let the guy like get a clean view of the basket until he's elevated. Now, he actually got a pretty good shot, which is a little scary, but
a little scary. Too good of a shot.
Yeah, top of the key, you can't ask for a better chance. Anyway, that was quite a game. I don't know. I guess talking about some other guys, Isaiah Moss, great game. Kind of quiet game, but you know, he impacted the game without making three pointers. He got on the floor a little bit of time, got to the basket, and he was finishing. I mean, he's actually, it seems like in the past, you know, couple weeks, it feels like he's starting to put the ball on the ground a little bit. And that is, you know, a game changer for him, because if he even has the soft threat of doing that and finishing or getting fouled, because he's a great free throw shooter, you know, maybe it opens up a little bit more for him to have some room to shoot too. But when he's out there and he's starting to look like a complete player, and not just, and even on defense, he's playing, it seems like he's playing better defense. That's a huge plus when we've got, you know, somewhat of a hole there. Is it, you know, is it Christian Brown's spot? Is it Moss's spot? Now we've got some options there for sure. And then, Ochai, I think we got to touch on Ochai a little bit, right? Pretty brutal game. And he's had this all year where, you know, he'll show you something and you'll be like, that's it. That's the Ochai that it was on draft boards before this season. Right. But it just, I think if you point anywhere on this team that's somewhat of a disappointment at this time, I think it's got to be Ochai. Am I putting too much on him?
Well, it's just very inconsistent, because there are games that he can absolutely take over. And I, you know, he played 39 minutes in this game, and I think he played really good defense.
He did.
That was a big part of it. And his defense, I think, has improved significantly. But he went 0 for 5. And, you know, I think the downs or the bad spots, the real dark spots on this game were just very, very evident. The first one, he missed that little layup that would have put us up by a better number. I don't remember where we were exactly at in the game, but if he would have made that, it basically puts it out of reach. The other part, gets the inbound with 29 seconds left, and he just gives a lazy pass. I don't even know who that was to.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was to Moss or
to
Dotson.
It was to Moss, I think, but it's still...
It was like right in between them, and neither one of them got it, and they got a three.
And you have a timeout there. You have a timeout.
Yeah, so those are two in crunch time minutes, two pretty big errors. I think if you remove that and you ignore that he didn't score, the rest of it was fine. Now I'm removing a lot here, but I think a lot of that can come. I think his 3-point shot, he only took, well, how many take? He took two. You know, maybe we can get him the ball more on that line, but like, you know, in terms of our shot selection, just give the ball to Doak. That's all we need to do. If he's not getting his shot, you know, it's not an Ochai game. It's a Doak game.
Yeah.
And rest of the stuff.
He doesn't have to be. That's the one nice thing for his role in this team. He does not have to be the leading scorer. He does not have to be the second leading scorer. And in some days, I mean, if you know, Moss is making some threes or whatever, or God dang, Garrett's getting to the line and making free throws and, you know, getting up in double digits. You know, he doesn't even have to be the third highest scorer. But you know, I agree. It's all about consistency with him. And at least, you know, I mean, if he's playing 39 minutes, you know, he's providing value on the court. Otherwise he wouldn't be in there, on the defensive end particularly and moving the ball and things like that. But, you touched on 3-pointers, Andrew. We were 3 of 13 from three and we beat the number one team. Like that in itself says a lot about this team this year. It's a different way of playing, and that I think, first of all, Bill Self loves. It's rooted in defense. It's rooted in
dunks
and efficiency or dunks.
Dunks are very efficient.
Yeah, although 3-pointers are technically efficient too. But like the difference is, I mean, you look down and we were getting good looks, we were getting good shots, and we were getting high percentage shots, obviously. And then, you know, playing awesome defense. And that's kind of the MO. And the good news is those things are repeatable, right? That's a rinse and repeat type of thing. If you bring in energy too, that's tough to beat. And the other thing is Baylor's sort of doing the same thing, right? And, I don't want to undersell. I think Bill Self called Baylor the best team, the best Big 12 team he's played since he's been here. That might be a little recency bias, but I think it's up there. And you look at the KenPom numbers, it's up there. Like that's an incredible team. I think you got to give them credit it's due.
Just thinking back past couple of years, you know, the Buddy OU teams.
Yep.
The Texas Tech team last year,
absolutely.
But real, I mean, up there, they're up there, definitely up there. Before we close out just this part of the rundown, want to go back to the starting lineup. So Isaiah Moss has been starting the past several games. Christian Brown. I'm just looking at it.
I
want to say Brown. It's not. It's Brown. Christian Brown has gotten that spot a little bit. But yesterday, Isaiah Moss played 31 minutes. Christian Brown played 21, so he got his run. He got plenty of shine there. But is that the lineup that we're going to see going forward, Isaiah Moss over Christian Brown in a minute distribution like that? Or do you think Brown's going to get more of a shot going forward?
I mean, if Moss continues to play defense, because that was the question mark, was is he a one-trick pony? Is he just in there to make threes? If he's able to complete his game and round it out, get into the free throw line and get into the bucket and obviously still splashing a few threes and playing just decent defense, which it sure looked like he was. He was, you know, high energy, looked like he was really moving. I think that's the answer. I think Moss has to play more than Brown. That said, you know, Christian Brown had a couple of really good weeks there for a stretch. And I feel pretty comfortable that both those guys are going to get run either way. And the minute distribution may just sort of vary depending on maybe a little bit personnel of the other team. But I think at this point you have to think so, that Moss will probably be getting a few more minutes than Brown just based on, you know, seniority and the value that he brings from the 3-point line, particularly because we don't have, you know, a huge strength in that in the rest of the team. Although Brown's a heck of a 3-point shooter too. So
one more thing I want to throw out there, Tristan Inarua.
Yeah. Where's he been?
Didn't play any minutes yesterday. But I see him as being a contributor the rest of this season, especially in the next couple games and into the Big 12 tournament. But does he figure into the rotation in any meaningful way? You've seen Bill Self kind of remove him from these big games. If you remember earlier this season, did not play against West Virginia. Bill Self really tightened up yesterday. Only played 7 guys. And David McCormick only played 4 minutes of those 7. So this was really a tight-knit group with the starters plus Christian Brown. So Inarua, what do you think?
I think it's probably going to be personnel dependent. I mean, he's sort of a Swiss Army knife player right now, who I think is going to be awesome once he puts it all together and once we figure out how to deploy him. But we got some good things going right now with these lineups, with the kind of core lineups that we're playing with. I think it'd probably take some foul trouble for him to be like I don't think he's going to be a consistent producer down the stretch here. Now, could he be one of those guys that like comes off the bench and plays 11 minutes and gives a huge spark in some game? Like, absolutely. But I don't see him being like a huge contributor this season down the stretch personally, but I could be wrong. Only because I've seen good stuff with this group right now. Like, why would you change anything with what we got going?
Let's look forward. We've got 4 games left in the Big 12 season. We are currently tied atop the Big 12 with Baylor. Tomorrow night, Oklahoma State comes to town. Then on Saturday, probably the biggest matchup we'll have with a larger than 100 rated KenPom team ever. K-State, I think they're ranked exactly 100 on February 29th on Leap Day next Saturday, which I think everybody's going to be keeping an eye on that one, just not necessarily from a basketball standpoint, but this may be a pay-per-view matchup that you can buy for $79.99, like you could buy the boxing match this weekend. Then we close out with TCU and go to Texas Tech. What are our chances of closing out the Big 12 with a ring? Does it matter to you? I will also throw to you that Baylor has to go to West Virginia and has to play Texas Tech at home. So that's the context.
Yeah, I mean, per KenPom, the answer would be yes. I think we got a really good chance of closing out. The projected record still has it at 16-2. For us. So, you know, those 4 games, you know, put all together, he would still say we'd go 3-1. I have a feeling that Baylor's is the same. I don't have it in front of me. But looking at, you know, our matchups versus theirs, I think I like ours. Now Oklahoma State had a nice win yesterday or Saturday, playing, what was it, Oklahoma? Didn't they kind of crush them?
They almost won by 20. I think it ended up with 17, but it was a blowout.
Yeah. How about that? So, you know, all of a sudden maybe Oklahoma State's putting something together. Obviously we've had interesting times with Oklahoma State in the past. The good news is this is in Allen Fieldhouse. And then K-State, you know, away, KenPom has that as a 13-point line, you know, on 70-57 on the prediction right now. I have a feeling it'll maybe be closer than that. I don't know.
Really? Really? Did you see their game really against bad. Texas on they're national television? Really it was on bad. CBS. It was on national television.
I know.
You know, ESPN's great, and it's a high eyeball, but it's still cable. This was on CBS.
Yeah. Like
this
around
is on
the world.
Broadcast television, and they got blown out by Texas. Now it ended up being a little closer than like the score was. Because I think in the first half they were down nearly 30.
Yeah.
I think they lost by 11, or it was 11 or 10 or 11. But it was bad. They looked bad. So
I don't know. I could see that going one of two ways. We either win by 25 and we're just clowning them, or it's like a 7 or 8 point game.
I lean towards the first there. I think we're gonna blow them out.
That'd be fun.
I kind of want to go too.
I kind of want to go. That could be fun.
Like that game, they get jacked up for, right?
Oh yeah, it'll be probably but, like, close this, to this, sold out. I bet it's sold out.
Right, like this that type of game, like they always get up for that. Like the one game of the year, they actually get up for, and that's not always true. But when they have a bad team, that's the only one they get up for. Now. With this situation, with we'll just call it Stoolgate, with Stoolgate being a thing, I think they're going to be a little more jacked. I think the resale market probably can see those tickets go up dramatically in price because of that. If it was just like, you know, okay, KU's coming to town, no big deal, you know, normal rivalry game, it probably sells for pretty well, but not that much. But I bet they probably doubled from what they would have been.
Probably, which, you know. You won't be doing it for the basketball, folks. you're doing it for the story. Because, K-State is not – they're not good. They're not very good this year. If you're looking at KenPom, we have a 94% chance to win Monday, an 87% chance to win at K-State, a 95% chance to win at home against TCU. So those three games, it's, you know, basically 90% average. 9 out of 10 times we're going to win. And then the last one, a 61% chance to win away at Tech. And that'll be for for everything. Now, the question is, will it be for everything in a tie, or will it be for everything, you know, and solo? To your original question, do you care?
I absolutely care. I want to win games. I want to win rings. Now, the Big 12, the streak's gone, so it doesn't mean like, oh, man, we just can't lose it this year. There was a lot of pressure there. But this team, I think, needs to just keep it rolling. I mean, they're doing what they're doing. They don't get picked off by like a random TCU team or, you know, these random games. They've lost three games, one of them to the former number one team in the country that they just got payback, and the other by a combined 3 points to top teams.
Yep.
So this team is, I think, one of the best teams we've had in a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, you think back to, you had these Frank Mason, Devontae Graham teams. You had kind of some middle years with some one and done flameouts, or not flameouts, but not success in the tournament. And then going back to those early 2010 teams were really good. And I think this team, you know, you'd have to probably go back to 08 to, or maybe to 10 to get a team that matches what this team can do.
I could not be more excited about this team in the postseason. And usually with KU, I'm not a very good fan when it comes to this stuff, because I kind of dread it, because it's sort of this, you know, it's fun. Yay, I'm excited for, you know, March Madness and postseason, but I also get so sad when we lose that it's sort of like you're just on, you know, pins and needles the whole time. It kind of felt like the Super Bowl game. Like you don't have that, you know, one and done feeling in any other sport except for college basketball, except for, you know, recently we had the Super Bowl, which hadn't happened before. But that feeling I don't really like very much, even though it's fun and I love it and, you know, whatever. But for some reason, this season, it's just the way that we have been winning gets me really excited, because I think this is going to translate. Now, you can always run into a buzzsaw and whatever, but man, this team is a lot of fun. I think you line us up compared to college basketball on the field. I don't think there's a question which team is the best team in the country right now. And I think it's been that way for a little while, honestly.
You know, even when we've had good teams, I mean, I think the only team is Baylor. The only team you can really compare,
yeah,
I think, is Baylor.
I think that's right. I think that's exactly right.
I think some of these other years when we've had really good teams, there's always been like, oh, okay, well, Villanova is also pretty good, and Duke's also pretty good. North Carolina is also pretty good. I don't think we have that this year. I think there's
Are you scared of Duke? I mean,
no. I mean, we lost to them, but like I think we'd roll them now.
Like, we've played Dayton, so we know what's going on there. West Virginia is the next highest KenPom team at 7. I've seen you
beat them twice.
I mean, you start getting into the Big Ten teams, you know, Michigan State, Maryland, Michigan, Ohio State. I mean, they've all felt overrated all year to me. You know, I think Creighton's pretty good, but like that, you're getting way down there. I think BYU is a little scary, but frankly, we beat them too. And
we rolled them.
You're looking at this and you know, the team that you don't really want to see on your side of the bracket is probably Baylor.
It's probably Baylor. Yeah.
And the good news is we know them. Or whether that's a good news or not, I guess I'll take us versus Scott Drew. But anyway, that's what sort of gets me excited about this season versus other seasons, when you're getting into this time of the year and you're starting to look at it and you're starting to, start looking at bracketology and you know, where are we going to line up? And God, I don't think really there's any scenario where we're not the one seed in the Midwest now. And so, I mean, like theoretically, I guess we could lose out, but I think it would take an incredible, precipitous drop with multi losses down the stretch here, to get to that point. So that's how comfortable feeling is that, like, you know, at least you're pretty comfortable at this point that you're going to be the one seed in the Midwest. Like, that's pretty freeing when you're Bill Self and you're looking at this, team and what they could do. I don't know about you, man, but this is something different about this team going into the postseason compared to past years that I can't really explain other than I'm actually like really excited about it.
Well, they're just really good, and they do the same thing over and over again, and no one can stop them.
And it's repeatable.
Right.
It's repeatable.
Defense travels. Defense, yep. You can always – and we've played excellent defense in every game this season. Maybe the Baylor game we slipped up a little bit, but I think we played excellent defense in every game. Even that Duke game, I think we played excellent defense. That wasn't the reason why we lost.
It was a slippery ball.
28 turnovers, which is unfathomable. How did that even happen?
I don't know. Particularly,
I think we played defense in every game, and we can keep that going.
Like, all right.
And dunks are easy too.
I love dunks. I have a few Twitter questions for you, Andrew. We could take these rapid fire. This is from our guy, Scott Chasen. An interesting question, and I really like it. It says, yes, I have a question. Power rank, and I'm already a good start, right? We love power ranking. Power rank these three feelings, okay? Number one, silencing a road crowd with a huge dunk. That's a good feeling. A three-point shot to go up 12 at the first half buzzer. Okay, that's a good feeling. And three straight blocks on one possession. Okay, you got those?
I'm going to go just based on, like, because we're talking feeling here. We're talking
just
about
feeling.
Like,
oh.
That, like, me personally?
It moved, yeah.
I'm going to go with three straight blocks.
Yeah.
Number one, because if I'm in Allen Fieldhouse, the place is going to be jacked, and that's going to get me feeling like a lot. The road one, that means I'm probably watching from home, so I'm going to put that last. And then the other one would be, what was the third one?
3-point shot to go up 12 at first half buzzer.
Sure, that one.
That's last. I think I'm going to swap the first two, but otherwise we're the same. I love when, you know, a crowd gets fired up and then you just tear their heart out with some massive dunk. First of all, I love dunks, but like there's something about that where guys, when you're able to do that and you just kind of look around the stadium, like, that's right. There's something about that. But it's close. Cause I love blocks too. A good question there, Scott. Here's another one. Let's see. Okay, we already did the Garrett one. Here's a question. I don't know what this means. I hope that you do. Who do you have in the final of the Scotties tonight? What are the Scotties?
Don't know. Let me Google it.
Wait a minute. Is that the curling thing? Google it.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm gonna go with Homan.
Okay. All right. There you go. Good question. Rock Chalk Talk. I usually get
Homan over Iverson.
There you go.
Holman, we're just going to go with Holman. Yeah.
I think we answered all the rest of these questions. We sort of mixed them in throughout the thing. So how about that? Andrew, a couple predictions while we leave here. How many KU players are going to be on the All Big 12 first team? And I know we've got two as lock, but can Marcus Garrett sneak in there?
Oh, see, that is the real question. I don't think so, because I think that there are a lot of players that deserve to be on that team. Maybe one or two from Baylor, and then you can't leave out the guy from Texas Tech, and you know, Shibwe from West Virginia. Yeah, so there's a lot of good players that deserve it. So Marcus Garrett, I think he should settle for maybe second team and Big 12 Player of the Year and defensive call it player. Good.
Yeah.
Our defensive player of the year and call it good. But
I think that's right.
I mean, the guy from Texas Tech, Ramsey. Freshman, he's good. He's going to be a draft pick. I mean, he deserves to be on that team as well.
He's good.
And then I don't really think anybody from Oklahoma beyond, but those first four deserve all those teams.
Second question.
Those first four teams deserve all the spots.
I'm making these up as I go. Okay. Who could be the opposite side of the bracket that could beat Baylor and match us up in the Big 12 final, assuming we were to get there? Who's the other team? Because is it West Virginia side? These days? Like that's the, I know KenPom sure likes them, but
let's check on the schedule here or on the what the Big 12 looks like. It looks like we're probably going to play West Virginia. What's the current standings? We'll go to projected standings. I guess West Virginia and Texas Tech could flip. I think West Virginia could probably beat Baylor. Or Texas Tech. I think those teams are pretty comparable.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Texas Tech, I don't think gets a ton of love. I think they are really good.
I agree.
West Virginia seems to get too much love. I think they should maybe be regarded more similar. But everybody else is trash, I think.
How many teams do we get in the Big 12 into the tournament?
I've seen mock drafts, or not mock drafts, mock selections, yep. Bracketologies that have Oklahoma in there and like as high as a 9, 10, 11.
I don't get that.
I think they're not very good. Maybe put them in the first four.
Yeah, that feels right.
But that's it. Yeah.
So that'd be five teams?
I think we only deserve four, but I think those four are incredibly strong.
Yeah, I think that's right. Okay, those are all the questions that I can
either one of those, any of those four can make the Final Four, I think.
Do you have any questions? It's okay.
Do I have any questions? No, I just want to watch this team play more. I'm going to go to the game tomorrow against Oklahoma State. Hopefully, this is the last time we will see Lindy Waters and Cameron McGriff and Allen Fieldhouse do random things. We saw that work out not so well a couple of years ago. I'm excited. It's almost March. We are 6 days away from March. That's so close, Kevin.
Yeah.
That's so close.
We're almost there. I have a feeling that we're going to be doing another podcast in early March at some point.
We're turning it on right now.
Yeah, that's right. We're getting to late season.
We've been like a trickle. We've been like a trickle so far this season. Now it's going to be a fire hose.
Now our guy Brian Haney has a podcast. Did you see this?
Yeah, I listened to it.
Oh, good. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I didn't know that was a thing. So good for him. But, you got to remember the original Jayhawk podcast, Jayhawk Talk.
The first, the O-Ridge, the OG.
The OGs 7 years ago. Is that right?
No, it was
6 years ago.
September 2012.
8 years ago.
And Charlie Weiss had just started.
Yeah, that's right. There you go, Andrew. All right, well, let's get out of here. Obviously, incredible week for the Jayhawks, going up to number one in the rankings tomorrow, maybe unanimous. I mean, probably should be unanimous. We'll see.
It should be. Everybody else lost.
Yeah. I mean, unanimous number one, deserving so at least. And as you said, hopefully we can hold that mantle all the way through the rest of the year. A lot of fun games coming up, and we will be back to talk about those hopefully next Sunday. And I think we're going to try the Sunday thing. There might be some little tweaks here and there. I know we've said that, but now that we're getting into the end of the season, it's time, Andrew, it's time to really, it's time for you and I to, put some other priorities aside and put children aside, right? Put work aside, put everything else aside. It's time to talk about basketball. So that's what we do, and looking forward to that down the stretch here. Thank you so much for listening. You can catch me at Jayhawk Talk. You can catch Andrew at Sherlock Hoops. Do us one big favor, if you can, if you haven't done it yet. Go out to iTunes and leave us a message. Leave us a rating, review, comment, and subscribe if you haven't. I don't think we've had a comment since like last year. So that's our fault because we haven't really done that many podcasts. But now we're back. So I think it's time to probably try to solicit a few more of those. It helps us get the podcast out to new listeners. We really appreciate that. And all, as always, appreciate you listening. Until next time, rock chalk. I tried to tell them every time we on the court. I tried to tell them that we never coming up short. I tried to tell them that we came here to get the win. I tried to tell them that they should never let us in. They say that we the best, but I say we the greatest. That's why they try to knock us down and always seem to hate us. That's why they talk about us. They know they can never fade us. It's tradition and that Kansas pride that has truly made us. They know just how we feel. They know at Allen Field that we gon' keep it real. Shout out to Bill. This for them fans that waited off in them long lines, camped out before the games, and they stayed a long time. Every dollar that we spend just to watch our team win, on a Jayhawk shirt or a new clean Benz with a sticker on the back with the K and the U. Yeah, baby, that'll make you say, ooh. We at the top of the top, just like we should be. Started from the bottom, thanks to what James could see. Dr. Naismith made a game for man, changed lives for the players, and did the same for the fans. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, this baby. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. All them years that we've been cheering, everything that we've been hearing, all them spreads that we've been clearing, never been no team we fearing, and look how Bill got us steering, all them tournaments appearing with no team that's interfering. Nine times get the cheering with them banners held high and the crowd going wild. Night before the Final Four, you can't even sleep now. Yeah, we at the peak now, we can't even leap down. March Madness, man, we've been waiting weeks now. If you a Hawks fan, go ahead and hold them ones high. Shout out to the boosters showing love and the alumni. I'm speaking for the fans, even though I'm just one guy. We appreciate the love, love won't run dry. Imagine the state of Kansas with no Jayhawks. That's like having no streets but trying to jaywalk. They see us as support and we see them on the court. So we keep it loud and do our best so we don't come up short. We win together and we lose together. But win or lose, we still booze together. Struggles in my life will change me as a man. But one thing that'll never change, I'll be a Jayhawk fan. I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces. I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces. For my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawks.